I'm Ryan from the Dad.io podcast, a show dedicated to dorky dads everywhere. Part of the Gonna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other dadalicious geeky shows at GonnaGeekNetwork.com.
Welcome back to the Intellectual Podcast. I'm your host, David S. Dawson. I'd like to apologize, as you've heard me do on a few occasions over the years, for the infrequency of updates to the episodes over the last few weeks. It's been a crazy time for us between traveling on the road, which hopefully some of you followed our journey across America when Jordan Jacobo and myself journeyed from Miami all the way back to San Diego just a couple of weeks ago. If you haven't seen those videos, you can find them at the Intellectual Entertainment Facebook page. Just go to the videos tab and check out the hashtag Twinning Across America playlist. But we had the long journey across the country. And on top of that, we ran a 12-hour telethon called Jumpstart a Life, which benefited our friend Derek Johnston, who's battling stage 4 kidney cancer. And we raised $15,000 for Derek to help him in his needs and his expenses as he struggles to live. And it was an amazing experience, absolutely amazing. And there will be more announcements coming about Jumpstart a Life in the near future. But you know, these things, they take a lot of time, especially the telethon took up a lot of time. And it's just been very difficult to get these episodes out the door. But I apologize. The next two episodes, this one and the one following, we've had in the can for several weeks. I just haven't had the chance to sit down, record an intro, and put the episodes together to send them out. But those apologies are, look, it is what it is. I hope you're still with us. I thank you for still being with us, and you know, we should probably just get straight into the episode, right? This episode is with makeup artist Linda Sheps. She and Whitney are friends, and we had a great conversation with her while I was up in Palm Springs, and she's got a lot of really great advice. She's got a lot of great stories to tell, and I think you're going to enjoy the episode. So let's get right into it. This is the 9th episode of the 6th season of the Intellectual Podcast with Linda Sheps.
Talk hard and enjoy the mindgasm. The Intellectual Podcast starts now.
Cool. All right. So we're here with Linda Sheps, who is a makeup artist and has been a makeup artist for what? 40, 50 years now? We'll
no,
say?
I'm old, but not that old. right in the middle, 45.
45. All right, we'll go 45. And you've done makeup for everything, stage, film, television. I guess a place to start is, how did you end up out in California? Tell us your life story and go.
Nothing small, you know, just tell us everything.
I was born in Chicago, Illinois, and at the time, right before my 10th birthday, my parents decided that they did not want to live in Chicago anymore. So my mother's parents lived in Culver City, and they migrated to California. And being brought up in the both entertainment industry and health and beauty, it was a natural progression to come to Culver City, LA, mm-hmm. Hollywood area. And I grew up in a very small portion of Culver City, where I attended Culver City High School, which was right on Overland, right next to the studios. And growing up, I love to tell this story. My parents thought I was demented because I used to take all of my dolls and cut their heads off and put ketchup and mustard on their faces. And I go, oh, look at my doll. It was trying to kill somebody, but somebody killed the doll. And So they thought that perhaps I had some mental issues, but really I just loved watching scary movies. I loved how that would, I couldn't understand how they would create those looks. Consequently, going to high school, progressing quickly from, you don't need to hear about junior high, but then in high school, I ended up having the wonderful opportunity to go into the studios for a pickup person, which was pick up the trash, pick up the brush, pick up the paper on the floor, but always hanging out in the makeup studios and so forth.
That's cool.
And ultimately ended up deciding that I did not need high school because I had a future watching the pros. So from high school, I started my own business and ultimately ended up having a pretty vital privatized makeup business, doing weddings, proms, so forth, and educating myself through means of volunteering and working in the studios under, and being, of course, being trained by some of the greats who are no longer with us, Harry Blake, NBC Studios, Robert Schiffer, Walt Disney Studios, Maurice Stein, all icons in this business. And they took me under their wing, trained me. And with working with them, I had opportunities to work in all different kinds of environments with different types of makeup. Thus, began a different avenue in my career. One of my best friends was a manicurist, and she decided that we were going to go after a different type of business, which was the rock world, so to speak. And so she became the manicurist for some pretty big rock stars. And then I just would start to tag along and do the makeup for them. Then I decided that I hated Los Angeles. I couldn't take the traffic, the confusion, and I knew that I really loved theater. Mm-hmm. I really, really loved theater. And I also knew that I wanted to be married and have children. And I met my husband. I owned a series of beauty supplies in Inglewood and all over Southern California. With my parents, we sold it and they migrated here to the desert. And then I followed.
The desert being Palm Springs.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then we opened up I don't want to say a vessel, but a string of beauty supplies. And one day, about 27 years ago, College of the Desert was doing the show Annie. And they came into the store. And that time I had, of course, been married for a while and had children and was starting to get that itch again that I needed to do something.
Right.
You know, I didn't know what it was, but I knew that having an business in India at that time, 27 years, I had a huge Halloween business and I was doing Halloween houses and I knew that was not going to be enough for me. And as I said, 27 years ago, College of the Desert was doing Annie, and one of the administrative secretaries had come into the store because we were the biggest beauty supply in the desert and we sold everything that was theatrical, special effect makeup, because that was my outlet.
Right.
Until I was able to actually work, and came in and was looking for wigs. And the minute she said wigs, I literally went into a fifth gear and went, "You need wigs? I do wigs. What do you need it for? I want to do your show. Can I do your show?" Thus, they said, "Well, we already have a wig girl, but can we buy the wig from you?" And I went, "Okay." I was completely disillusioned. I thought, how am I going to get in there? What are they going to do? The next show they did was Fiddler on the Roof. And I went in and I volunteered and it was at the McCallum. And I had the great fortune of meeting some of the staff that worked there at that time. And they saw what I could do. Then I started working with the union and I would filter back and forth from wardrobe to makeup, wardrobe makeup. And then I decided that I didn't want to change anyone's sweaty clothes. So I went back to, and it was much harder than makeup and wigs and so forth. So I predominantly concentrated on that. I was asked to be considered an in-house. And then the college revisited and invited me to start teaching at the school. So I wrote a curriculum and it was approved by the dean at that time. And I started teaching. And because at that time, I've been in the desert, I think it's 39, 40 years now. By that time, it was still such a small area and networking was amazing. Mm-hmm. And no one at that time in the desert was doing what I was doing. And I was able to really capitalize on that and had opportunity to work with the Palm Springs Film Alliance, the Riverside Film Alliance, ultimately becoming really a permanent position with the McCallumet permanent position as an adjunct. But now it's a little different at the college, as you know. When you're an adjunct based on your class size, it permits your class to have that green light or not. And through that, I had the opportunity with the union to work every major event that ever came through with the Golf Channel, with the Tennis Channel, with ESPN, working here at the Marriott also for industrials. Ultimately, then a new theater that's here, you know about it, the Coachella Valley Rep, I'm on staff with them. And one other theater in here, I'm on staff with them. And so that's a little bit of a background. Did a lot of traveling, you know, in the beginning, a lot of grunge work, but you have to pay your dues.
Yeah.
And now I am extremely proud that in the 27 years that I've been in COD, I percentage wise, I would say that almost 80% of the kids that have gone through, both either adults that are trying to reinvent themselves with a new career and or acting students and or people who are interested in makeup, are taking it seriously. Yeah. I had one particular, I have three in Europe working. I have New York kids working in New York. And of course, the one student that I have probably is going to win an Academy Award.
Student's special,
out. Yeah.
Well, he's not just a student. He's also your adoptive son.
Yes.
So, can you want to tell us a little bit about him?
Sure. His name's Koji Omura. And about 18-19 years ago, he did not register for the class. He was an international student from Japan, Duke College of the Desert. And he kept coming into my room and I kept kicking him out because insurance-wise, I could not have anyone in there that was not registered.
Right.
Finally, he registered for the class, and after the first, I would say, technical implementation that he did, I knew immediately there was something that was extraordinarily special and unbelievably talented. And so as the semester progressed, he only increased not only in his artistic ability, but his motivation to push himself. So he was invited with me with all of the jobs. He ended up to be my assistant and ended up doing, he learned the business aspect, the scheduling, the budgeting, and everything that goes into the front and the back of it. Ultimately, when he got his AA degree, the College of the Desert gave him a scholarship because of his artistic ability. And then I started to navigate through networking, getting him into all the connections that I had in LA. And from that, again, he proved his unbelievably undeniable talent. He started with a makeup artist by the name of Michael Mosher. Then he went to ADI, I think it was, ultimately ending up with Matthew Mungle. And now he has his own studio. He's a special effect makeup artist. He was just nominated with 706, which is the Union for Hair and Makeup, for a piece that he did for Justin Timberlake. Mm-hmm. He creates anything and everything which is related to the world of special effects. He has his own lab now. He has his own crew. So he's pretty special.
That's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Going back a little bit, so you talked about decapitating your dolls and making them all bloody and stuff. That implies exposure to horror films at a fairly young age.
It started with Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Just Casper?
Yes.
As simple as Casper the Friendly Ghost?
And then it started with, I remember, I don't want you to think my family's demented or anything.
No, there was no judgment being passed. I was just trying to.
I was watching Stephen King films at like age four.
Yeah. Poltergeist was one of my early films. And stuff, like, so
my brother had this fantasy with turning the lights out and scaring the shit out of me all the time. And then he would put on the old classic like Frankenstein and like Phantom Hammer of the Opera. And I was mesmerized by the appearances that I knew that they were not a normal man or a normal woman, but there was something that it was like an altered state. I didn't have any clue how they did any of that. But ultimately, as he would have, when my parents would go out, his fantasy was to scare the shit out of Linda. And consequently, when he would put the movies on, it never happened because all I wanted to do was watch the shows. So I think that was it. One of the greatest things that did happen out of this desert was, and I don't know if you're aware of that, but two great offsprings of the great classic horror live here. Ron Chaney, who is the great-grandson of Lon Chaney.
Yeah.
And Bela Lugosi's great-granddaughter lives here, too.
Oh, wow. Oh. I didn't know that.
And I had a great opportunity to work with Ron. So cool. It came from that.
What show did you work with him on?
Ron Chaney? Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, he did a magnificent piece of work that was supposed to showcase many years at the tennis tournament, where we created and reenact pieces from his grandfather's movies. Ultimately, unfortunately, it did not happen. But my relationship is continued with him. And every time a few years ago, when he would be asked to speak or work or recreate a character, I would do his makeup. At one time, his son went to Xavier, the private school here in town, and he was in charge for many years of the haunted house, and we did that. And my relationship is now friendship with him. But he goes to Monster Palooza and Fangoria and has the rights for, I don't know if I'm supposed to say, but all of his great-grandfather stuff. So now it's friendship and so forth.
That's awesome. I wanted to ask, so you said that early on in your career, you worked with rock stars and stuff. What was that like and who were the rock stars?
I think it was great. I'm probably deaf in one ear from it. Well, locally, it was, at that time, growing up in the 60s, one of them was Linda Ronstadt.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because as I told you, my best friend, we decided we were going to go in business, and she was her manicurist. And then, of course, what else do you do? Well, I do hair and makeup. So it was a lot with her. And from her, we were referred a couple times to, well, I don't know if you'd call her a rock star, but it was Olivia Newton-John, and I did her few times.
Yes.
And then
Olivia's wonderful, beautiful human being.
My crew had the
opportunity to interview her for a documentary last year.
Oh,
she was
wow.
just delightful.
Yeah. I was not her personal, just a few times, and it was in the early 60s. Who knows if they would even remember me, you know, because they've been had
well,
so
I mean,
many,
it, yeah. Everybody comes and goes in
yeah,
this business,
exactly,
right? We all
exactly.
come together for brief uh-huh. periods of time and move on. You know?
And of course, in the 60s, as you know, it was Woodstock. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of local bands and traveled with them, and if they wanted fake tattoos or grunge looks and so forth like that. And now being at the in-house at the McCallum, it's a different type of makeup, of course, that's being done.
How much has in most of this business, the technology's like been changing dramatically over the last 30, 40 years. Has the makeup stayed fairly consistent, or have there been pretty big changes in how makeup is done as well?
Oh, I think that makeup today, first of all, in the United States, I think there's $5 or $6 billion businesses. One, of course, being health and beauty, and of course, now makeup is huge, mm-hmm. huge. And there's different classifications of makeup. So that question you're asking is very broad. Okay, so if you look at plain beauty, there's bloggers, there's influencers, there's makeup companies that are projected to do billions of dollars. And one of the greatest media tools is Instagram, where bloggers and influencers are putting their work out. And then get followers and then get picked up by these companies. So right. beauty is one type. Private industry, bridal makeup, huge business.
Right.
Huge business. Because at that day in a woman or a man's life, they want to look their best. They're willing to do anything within their budget that they can. As far as film and television, it's definitely changed. Products have improved. We have something called CGI, which is computer-generated images.
Right.
It's cost-effective. It changes a little bit the way things are done.
So but like Voldemort in the Harry Potter films. You couldn't have done that makeup any other way because you lost his nose.
Like, well, if you look at Avatar, a lot of that CGI, yeah. and I believe, and please correct me, I could be wrong, but I believe... Prior to that, there was another film, but that was the early stages of CGI, you know? So it definitely has made the industry, as the world of makeup, change a little bit. But the effects, its stuff, is definitely a huge and enormous part of an entire process of creativity, imagination, dimension, texture, everything that creates what the character looks like.
So in a situation where they are using a lot of CGI to supplement the makeup or to completely replace somebody's face, how much involvement does the makeup artist on a film have with the digital artists in creating those looks, or is it left up to the digital artists to come up with?
I think it's really
kind
based
of the digital
on
makeup of the character.
Yes, I think that it's based on script number one and the changes mm-hmm. that the character goes through. I think the basic facial shape of the male or female cast is used. It's enhanced, and then I think that there's definitely a collaborative effort. However, ultimately, it comes down to producers, directors, cost, budget, and what is needed.
Mm-hmm.
And so definitely a collaboration. And in many, many ways, CGI takes away, how can I say this? CGI is magnificent. It's definitely utilized. It's definitely a part of the film industry. Hardcore makeup, hardcore technical, hands-on, hand-painted makeup versus now airbrush is always used as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm from the old school. I love just the hardcore, total implementation of balance, dimension, texture, mm-hmm. really looking at the face, creating it, and then transitioning that into taking that into charactership, which is then the illusion of what the character is, the changes yeah. that goes through the script.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, based on big budget films, big, gigantic, well-known, hugely paid artists, you know, sometimes the budget is on a different equal plane mm-hmm. because when you're paying millions of dollars for production costs,
yeah.
somewhere they have to kind of, you know, the food chain goes down and cuts a little bit. So if that takes place where you can get away with not doing life costs, not sculpting, and not using the proper technical techniques to create something, and someone at a computer can click in something, maybe that could happen.
Well, I think there's a movement, certainly like J.J. Abrams is pushing to bring traditional makeup back to the set and not have everything just be dots on people's faces. So, but then they'll take the kind of hard makeup that was done on set and they'll digitally enhance it later. But he's pushing real hard to keep traditional stuff alive because it gives the actor something to perform to.
Well, I think the premise of that is absolutely something that they really should look at and evaluate. Because when you look at the different areas that require the makeup, one of the best places for people to learn is in theater. Mm-hmm. Because it's live, it happens. Mm-hmm. And you are hit from light from above, below, in the around the apron, on the wings. And if you are not balanced and you're not readable to authenticity to the audience, the believability, you know, that can create havoc, just as it would in film and television. So that's the essence. That's like the foundation of where you learn from.
Right.
And once you have 90% of those skills, you can then grow and then really build what your portfolio, as far as your technical abilities are, as well as your resumes, as well as what you're doing. So hard, like I said, holds old school, hardcore, hands in the face makeup is really, I think, vital as a building block for a future makeup artist. It's very interesting. Some of the masters which taught me, which was Harry Blake, after World War II, when they came back and the war was over, the country, of course, was going through transition. And they came back and they didn't necessarily have jobs. And so a lot of them went to Culver City, Hollywood, and they went to the studios and they would line up and they would say, one man, you look like you could do props. Oh, you look like you could do makeup. You look like, oh, you know, you could be a costumer. And
I like the cut of your jib. Yeah, lighting.
Exactly. And what ended up happening was Harry Blake, who ultimately became my surrogate grandpa, he was put into the makeup department. And he always told this great story, which still resonates in my heart, of what it was really like. So he gets into this makeup department and he was just newly married and he didn't, you know, really know so much about it. And he got on a show. I don't know if you'll remember this name, Ernie Kovacs. Uh-huh. And it was a live TV show because at that time they had Milton Berle. And,
right.
And he was a comedian and it was a weekly variety show and they would have different guests. And one of the episodes was they had an igloo and they were sitting in this igloo on set and they had to look as if he had a mustache and that there was, it became all frozen,
right.
And they didn't know what they were doing. They had no technique. They didn't know. So they went and they turned a gigantic fan on, took water and put salt and it got really cold and it made the appearance of a icicle dripping on the mustaches and so forth. And, you know, that's another really important asset of being a makeup artist, being spontaneous, being able to look at something, actually criticize what you need to do quickly without taking offense to anything, being able to spontaneously change it. Because as we know, both in theater, film, television, everything is expedited.
Mm-hmm. Find solutions to those problems.
Exactly. Right away.
So, okay, talking about like hands-on technical ability, in your career, what has been the most challenging technical makeup you've ever done and how long did it take? I give the stumper questions, man.
Yeah, you do that to every guest.
I think one of the most difficult was a triage event for the four branches of the military. It was held at Camp Pendleton in Oceanside, California. And it was a training session which brought the four branches together. And it was a nuclear holocaust. And we had diseases like tularemia. Wow. And I mean, diseases that I had never heard of. And we had X amount of time to do it. And they had to be really authentic because the mercy actually came. And when that ship pulled up and we had some of the most talented physicians that would see some of the most brutal injuries that can occur in war or in a nuclear scenario. The makeups had to be completely and totally precisioned, precise, accurate, and time. And I had the wonderful opportunity to work with Harry, Robert, and Maurice. And we had a really small team. There were only five or six of us. And we put out, I don't even remember how many injuries. So it was very technical, very difficult, and very rewarding at the same time.
Thanks.
It's incredibly cool because being part of this industry for as long as I have, I know that the military does that sort of stuff periodically, and they hire Hollywood essentially to come in and help them out.
I do it here.
What a fascinating thing to do.
Palm Springs International Airport, every 3 years, we do a, it's a superimposed plane crash.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do a lot of very severe injuries that could occur. So I hire a crew and we bring in the students from COD. They're the actors.
Yeah. And you got to make everything medically accurate because
it's about
them training and being able to assess and diagnose in the field under the extreme circumstances.
Same thing with the hospitals. I've done it many, many times for the hospitals. And the accuracy is so important because, God forbid, a severe traumatic event should occur. After all, we do live on the Andreas Fault.
Right.
You know, or a plane could crash. The assessment of the first responders are completely imperative for saving a life.
Right.
And so with having some really severe injuries and being really accurate what they are or not having the actor disclose, you know, maybe not being able to verbalize or be traumatized, you know, it becomes an exploratory event where the doctors have to figure out, hey, what's going on with this person? Where are the injuries? Or if they are out of control. The last one that I did for Palm Springs, I'm pretty sure you're going to know the student. I actually wrote the scenarios and kind of directed them the way that they had to act. And one of them, when the plane crashed, he went hysterical and was running all over the airfield. They actually had to handcuff him. And the head of the security came to me and said, could you please tell this actor to stop acting? Now we understand that he has severe injuries and, you know, he has to kind of calm it down now. So
it
was really good for the first responders, though.
Yeah. That's amazing.
There's so many different ways you can explore working and in this industry doing makeup. So many different ways. Just depends if you want industry or not, you know? If it's a private sector, there is definitely career opportunities.
Yeah.
No, of course, like, obviously, being a makeup artist, you have to train in all this technical stuff, but... from the makeup artists that I've interacted with, being an actor, you also have to have, like, that bedside manner down. How's that been as far as interacting with, you know, actors, famous people, et cetera, et cetera, and, like...
Yeah, the makeup artist is, like, the bartender of,
absolutely, of
the theater, right?
Exactly.
Pull up a chair. Let's have a chat.
You know, I think it is... I have trained literally in the 27 years... or more that I've been here, plus the additional years that I've been in LA. You know, this is a very hands-on, detailed, personal type of an interaction between two human beings.
It's an intimate job because you're literally touching people's faces. And
very intimate, as well as you are working with them, one of the most intimate parts of their being, which is their ego and their appearance and how they are perceived. And it takes, there are so many aspects to it because you have to have a business aspect to know how to handle and navigate through, you know, marketing yourself as well as then approaching the client, knowing how to deal with them, and especially knowing how to articulate what you need to do and how you need to do it in a very respectful manner, which then translates into a trust factor and confidence, where you're able to, through your actions, your words, your presentation of what you're going to, what you intend, your intent is and what you're going to do, that's all confidence building, so that that person, which, you know, does not know, will feel at ease. With major artists, they usually have their own personals, which they feel very comfortable with. But for example, when people come through McCallum, the traveling shows, they are literally going from city to city to city to city, and they never know what they're going to get.
Right.
Because sometimes things, events happen in theaters where people get sick and they'll bring in a bartender. Can you do hair? Yeah, I used to comb hair while I was a hairdresser years ago. In fact, this just happened a little while ago. Jersey Boys came through and the department had told me that they had a woman who was a bartender cosmetologist, and she came in because somebody, she was an alternate. So establishing the sense of confidence between two individuals and getting the job done, you really have to have the insight of how you, what communication is, because in communication there's a sender and a receiver.
Right.
And being able to,
you have to build trust between
exactly
the two parties,
especially when you are constantly in someone's face, literally, and touching them. And it is imperative to practice and execute the best sanitation skills you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And that's majorly, majorly, for me, it's one of the most important things about, because of cross-contamination.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I've definitely had makeup artists where I'm like, wait, did you clean that? Yes, you're not touching my face with that. And so you spray it, please.
Have you ever had anybody drop something on the floor and then they pick it up?
I've not. I've actually, the last few makeup artists I've had were impeccably clean, and I noticed it, and it was awesome. Like, oh, you're a little OCD. Thank God.
Yeah. Well, a lot of girls and guys, because now the world is so, oh, back to the story, just to tell you quickly. After Harry Blank and those guys got jobs in studios and then ultimately becoming the department head at NBC, makeup artists were completely dominated by males.
Right.
It's completely changed now. But many people, you know, how do you become a makeup artist? What do you do? I could tell you that. But a lot of people who have an affinity for makeup and want to work, they become what's called OTCs, which is over the counter. And what ends up happening is those people are either trained specifically by the particular product that they are retailing.
Mm-hmm.
And their practices for sanitation, product knowledge, application, all of that, ultimately their job is to boost sales retail. But
right.
At the same time, when the public comes into the major department stores, and some of the lines are magnificent and are widely recognized and billion-dollar businesses, those men and women that work the OTC are definitely available for outside work. And that's another way they can market to increase and create a career and have a business. And then hopefully they have enough skill set that the companies that are training them are teaching them marketing skills as well. Because when you're your own business owner, you have to be able to market oneself.
Right.
And as well as understand pricing, billing, you know, all the expenses that go in and how you go ahead to navigate to create the ultimate, because it's either a day rate or a half day rate or an hourly rate based like that. So
I know a gentleman like that in Kansas City. He worked at the Smashbox counter at the mall that was near my college. And anytime I had an event, he was the guy that I always asked for because he was just phenomenal. And eventually I went there and he was gone and I had his business card and I like, where'd you go? And he's like, oh, I'm working in New York now. I'm like, working in the theater circuit. I'm like, well, good for you, man.
Yeah. That's a really, really neat thing.
Yeah. I was bummed out that he wasn't around to do my makeup anymore, but you know, on to bigger and better things.
As everyone would like to do, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's pretty great. I feel very honored and grateful and humbled by the fact that as an older person working in this industry and being in the climate that I'm in the area that I'm in, I have the opportunity to mentor as well as still work. So I'm very, very grateful for that.
Yeah.
And especially teach, because, you know, we all have to, at one point in our life, reinvent ourselves.
Yeah, I've already done it a couple times.
So. You have? What have you?
Oh, I've been a sailor. I've been a truck driver. I do films. I do voiceover work.
You're a roadie, man.
I do everything.
You were a roadie, too. Yeah, that's hard work.
I did that, too. Yeah.
Hard work. I tried to do that once. In fact, one time, I remember I was at the McCallum, and I was supposed to do Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet, and then they said, well, you know, they have their own makeup artist. Would you like to do a loadout? And I went, okay, I'll do a loadout. And it was actually at the La Quinta Hotel. And it started at midnight. Mm-hmm. And I went and ultimately fell asleep in the bathroom because they asked me to carry cables that were underneath the stage. And I said, I'm not going to do this. Number one, I can't do it. Number two, I'm used to the heaviest thing I carry are my makeup brushes. So, you know, I slept the whole time in the bathroom and it was horrible. But being even a load in at the theater, load out, sometimes that's really tough too. But
yeah, I don't think people even fathom how much labor goes into entertaining them for half hour to 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. Well, they always say there is a show behind the show, mm-hmm. You know, and especially in theater, there is so much going on backstage between props, between the costume quick changes and the set changes and the calls and the stage manager. Oh, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. I don't think people even realize how many semi-trucks worth of gear comes in for a concert or a play or, you know.
That's why I think.
The amount of just stuff that has to be moved in and moved out.
Well, that's why I think, pardon me for interrupting, that theater is such a wonderful platform to learn in. Mm-hmm. Wonderful platform to learn in. But it's interesting for my career in the state of California. One needs a license to work in a beauty shop to do makeup. There are privatized makeup schools all over the United States.
Yeah.
And I believe they're certificated. But it is someday what will happen probably in the state, which I'm hoping it will, just for sanitary purposes. Eventually, they'll have to have some kind of licensing for makeup artistry. Because just like you said, when you had that makeup artist and you said, spray that brush. Those are like really imperative practices that you have to, you know, because.
Well, and I think the ones who are like actively trying to go after it professionally, I seem to be much better about that than like, you know, student productions and things like that, you know?
Yeah. Really? Yes, that's true.
Good. So what are some of the most recent films that have really stood out to you for good makeup? Like, I'm curious to hear what your thoughts
are. I just came from Los Angeles this last weekend for the event 706, which is gave out the awards for their industry makeup and hair.
Right.
And Greg Cannon was there. He turned Christian Bale into Chaney.
Yeah, that was amazing.
The other one that I really, really have stared at is Rami Malek as Freddie Mercury. Now, physically, he's statuesque, slender. And if you really look at his face, his natural face, really well, there are certain similarities in the feature, but the makeup artist on that captured those two films are pretty phenomenal. But right now for the Academy Award, which I'm taking my class to the symposiums this weekend, are the three nominees, I believe, are Vice, Mary Queen of Scots. I don't remember who the third one is. I'm so sorry. But probably Greg Cannon's going to win, probably. Yeah. I mean, he got it this last weekend. Yeah. So,
Yeah, that makeup, incredible.
Yeah. So the academy is really wonderful because College of the Desert is one of the only state-operated schools that's invited to go to these wonderful seminars and symposiums that they have the day before the Academy Awards. And this year, I'm taking them to a panel symposium with five of the nominees for the animated films. And then afterwards, they will be... they're invited to go to the makeup symposium where the three different nominees will be there. They show the trailers. And we used to be included for this magnificent reception with food and liquor, but they've decided because they were younger, you know, 18 or 19, they could not. And plus, it was not affordable. Yeah. But then afterwards, what the great part is budding makeup artists who have the opportunity to walk up to these iconic makeup artists and talk with them and look at they have their pieces there and take pictures with them and ask questions, you know, how you got started, what did you do, how did you, what was your passion, who helped you, how did you do it, why did you do it, you know, the who, what, where, how, why, and yeah, which is really a neat thing because when they're working professionally or in their private lives, who, how can you even get close to a someone to address them in that way. So right. This is a open. I personally, on Saturday, there is a woman who is my idol, and her name is Victoria Woods. And I was with her this weekend and just asked a million questions. She's the most famous wig maker, and I first, you know, you still have that awe where you're like, your mouth's open. She looks like a regular, Whitney, you wouldn't believe it. Just a regular lady walking
normal
down the
person.
Street. Yeah. And just down to earth. And so for my students to be able to go up to someone like a Greg Canyon, that's going to be amazing for them. So I'm really excited.
Well, I went with you to that symposium. Was it 2 years ago now? I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fascinating to just see how they went about it and hear them talk and, you know, what their process was and stuff. Because you don't really get a view into that side of the world. You hear from the actors a lot whenever they're, you know, pushing a movie or whatever. But you don't get to hear from a lot of the other creatives. And there is a lot of thought, an interesting thought that goes into that process. Like, I think it was Mad Max was one of the ones that was up and he was talking about, you know.
They won. Remember? Yes. Yeah. Yes.
What the choice of colors and the textures. And it was all about, you know, like, okay, the oil grease and things like that. And really delving into like the makeup came from what is the culture that these personalities, these characters are experiencing and why would they choose those? So
everything that is done is based on script analysis and character breakdown and interpretation because in all production, one, producers pay for it, right? Directors are the captain and they have to make sure that the vision that are the written words come to believability and life. And so every character has to be broken down to who it is, what it is, how it is, why it is, when it is, where it is. And all those under each one of those categories are subcategories, which are if this event occurred, the response and the reaction of the event, then there's changes. Mm-hmm. And so that also equates to looks, visual renderings, looks of what the character looks like, what that character goes through, ultimately ending up to product that's appropriate and correct and accurate and authentic to create it. Mm-hmm. And then also sustainability. Of course, again, theater's live. Film is completely different. And there are such innovators who are changing product knowledge right now too, as far as what products are out there. A lot of makeup artists are mixologists, you know, in their own. And they come up with great transfers and adhesives and different applications of silicones that have great durability and very, very natural looking. Again, because my career has changed, I kind of live through my son and learn all of the different things that they're doing in film, because I don't do that. I mean, I do some film out here, but not that much. I do TV, print, and mostly theater now. So it's changed again, age appropriately to be that way, you know?
Thank you so much for sitting and chatting with us.
Yeah, appreciate it. Was it okay? Yeah, thank you.
It's great. Absolutely. No. I feel like we should have you come on next year for our Oscar review podcast to specifically talk about makeup, because there's so much that I think you could bring to our discussions on that. It would be amazing.
I'd love to. Thank you for having me.
Hello there, citizens. I am the terror that flaps in the night. I am the floaty that will not flush no matter how many times you try in the toilet bowl of crime. I am Darkwing Duck, telling you, please, talk hard and enjoy the mindgasm. Whatever the heck that means. After all, you are watching Intellectual Podcast with your ears.
Hey, you guys know that we're part of the Gunna Geek Network, right? That's right. The Intellectual is part of GunnaGeek.com, a network of like-minded podcasts focused on all things geeky, which fits right in with my Comic Con style nature. If you're looking for new shows to watch, go over to GunnaGeek.com and find a whole slew of shows that you can watch, listen to, and enjoy. Like All Things Good and Nerdy. Each week, the crew from All Things Good and Nerdy run down the latest in geeky and nerdy news. Toss in the occasional game, and it all adds up to one wacky weekend morning show. Sundays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time at www.geeks.link/ATGN.